Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah.
This is Erica Salou in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And you're not listening to a tennis podcast, but the super irresistible tennis podcast.
Well, thank you, Erica, for introducing our show today from Cambridge, Massachusetts, and welcome to the Super Irresistible Tennis Podcast.
I don't mind being called that.
Erica's words, not mine, although now mine. You find us in Tennis Podcast Towers, Melbourne, the three of us here recording in Australia for the first time in three very long years. It is good to be back, David.
It is. I'm wearing shorts. I wasn't doing that in the last 2 months. Oh, dear. It's amazing, this place. Don't tell anybody I know back home because there's a lot of envy going around. It's amazing. It's amazing. And it's come on a bit, I think, as well. I mean, you were both here a year ago and saw some of the changes they'd made on site at the Australian Open. It's one of those places, innovative, isn't it? They're always doing something. But I think I'm probably looking at it through slightly different eyes now because I'm just so happy to be here.
Yes, we have wireless charging stations for our phones on our desks now.
Easily pleased we are.
That's the best innovation that's happened.
That's the content you think people are coming to the tennis podcast for, Matt, hearing about our wireless charging stations that we're very nerdily excited about.
I was going to say, don't pretend you're not excited about it too.
We were delighted to find those. We're pretty delighted with lots of things. The weather, Matt and I had an ice cream this afternoon. We're ticking all the Australia boxes, folks, don't you worry. We went to the draw today. We will be talking about that in some detail. That is what's coming up for you over the course of this episode, plus a fair few bits of news, headlines as well, and updates on the tournaments that have been taking place in various spots in the Southern Hemisphere this week. We've got Adelaide 2 happening. Adelaide 1 was last week. Adelaide 2 is this week.
The sequel.
Hobart has been happening. Auckland has been trying to happen, but
It's still raining.
So updates on all of that, but first just a reminder that the deadline, if you want to enter the annual predictions competition, or if you want to guest edit a podcast or become an executive producer, the deadline for all of those is Saturday at 11:59 p.m. UK time, that is. So it'll already be tomorrow for us that time, but wherever you are in the world, Greenwich Mean Time, 11:59 p.m. that is your deadline. All other categories remain open throughout the year, and you can become a friend at any point if you'd like to gain access to all of our bonus pods and or support us gallivanting around the world talking about tennis
and charging stations.
We support you supporting us doing that. We really do appreciate you. So let's start with the draw.
Where to begin?
I think we should begin with Matt, because Matt always has thoughts and feelings about tennis draws.
He races into the room, doesn't he, when they're doing the draw?
Yes, well, in fact, I burst into the room today and was greeted by someone telling me to shush because the draw had sort of already started.
And that was a bit awkward, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Shuffling past Todd Woodbridge on live TV. Don't mind us. We're a bit late.
But we made our way in. We took our seats. I was pleased that it wasn't a draw reveal. That's very important to me, that we see names go in and come out, and that's all. That all adds to the excitement. So I was pleased about that because I think the Australian Open have done draw reveals in the past. This was better.
It was a mostly draw reveal though, without the seeds though, wasn't it?
Yeah, the non-seeds were put in sort of electronically, and then they drew the seeds. I don't mind that. I'm afraid I do mind that.
Blooming long in a Grand Slam, David. If you're pulling every name out of a hat.
Mm. Mm.
I'm old school.
I think it's acceptable the way they did it.
Okay.
Would you go to it though, if that's what it was? If you knew you had to sit there in an auditorium
if I could see it, yeah.
We'll get onto that,
David.
I mean, to be honest with you, it's a good question because I don't think I have actually attended one that has done that with 128 names.
Wimbledon does
two.
It.
Yeah, it does. I like that better than all of them.
Oh, that is the gold standard, but this is acceptable, I would say. Generally, I felt like it was quite a low-key draw in terms of like going into it. I wasn't actually spending all day thinking, oh my God, I wonder what the draw's going to be, compared to some slams recently, because I think, honestly, Alcaraz withdrawing took the sting out of that men's draw a little bit. That's such a big name missing. And also, I remember at Wimbledon and the US Open last year, Serena was such a big factor. Where is Serena going to land? That whole story was so big. So this one was maybe a little bit more low-key, but obviously still extremely enjoyable with some fascinating lines. So that's all great. However, we were in the room for the draw, and I honestly think we had one of the worst possible experiences of the draw because, as David alluded to, we couldn't really see it. It felt like we were in the opticians and failing the test in front of us. We were squinting at a board trying to decipher names. Catherine at one point said, Caroline Garcia's got someone with a long name in the first round. And then we realised it was lucky loser / qualifier.
I thought somebody had drawn Diego Maradona in the first round.
I mean,
it was a D and an M. I can't, no, it was Teresa Martintseva. That's who it was. But
I mean, the truth is, we've come off basically to the other side of the world at vast cost and attended the official draw in person. It's feet away from us, and we seem to be the only people watching it on the planet who actually can't see what's going on.
There was a great feeling of camaraderie in the room among the journalists, wasn't there? Because a universal chuckle went to sort of a gasp and a chuckle all at once, or like a gasp into chuckle, like a sort of apology fist bump type situation. Everybody just going, all right, that's it. That's not a mistake. That's what's happening.
You can't see that. We all can't see it.
Yeah. Okay. But it turns out that actually Matt's special skill...
I was quite good at it, wasn't I?
Was interpreting tiny blurry names on a big screen.
What have you got in those glasses?
He picked out Nadia...
Podoroska?
No.
I was going to say,
that Serena Williams beat in...
Oh, Nuria Perithas Diaz.
Her. He picked her out.
Mm.
It was impressive stuff. Anyway, this is all very procedural for you at home, but we're trying to give you a flavour of our experience of the draw today, which... I think, I'm sure there are people listening that think we talk about draws too much, but they really could be a thing. They could be a feature. And the fact that it was, as you said, David, presented by Todd Woodbridge, they had these lovely flashy VTs, press were invited to it. That's tennis recognising that it can be a thing, that it can be a really good feature of the tournament. And yet tennis can't seem to get it right.
No, I mean, like I say, I still like Wimbledon's most of all. I do think, to be honest, they've got the referees announcing all the names. I think that the referees struggle sometimes with the names, and I'm not surprised. It's not easy sometimes to get all of these right, but I think that they could probably get some help with that, and just do the procedural part of things, of the drawing of them. But, you know, it's not that hard, really, to do these things and to make them sort of satisfactory for everybody. And I just think Wimbledon has that nice traditional kind of, in my childhood, FA Cup style of draw the names one at a time and explain to everybody what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, Wimbledon's probably is the most low-key in that they just get on with it, they just draw the names. I don't think they actually show it, do they? It's just available via radio, which is quite hard to follow when there's drawing, you know, 128 names. You literally do have to sort of have a draw in front of you and be writing the names in if you want to actually follow it in real time. But I agree with you, Catherine, that they recognise that there's value there. They sort of make it a bit of a show by getting a presenter, having nice VTs. But then the show just falls a little bit flat in the sort of production of it. It should be a big event. I get such a buzz out of the draw coming out. And I don't think I'm alone in that. It's the tournament starting, isn't it? It literally lays out what's ahead of you for the next 2 weeks or what might be ahead of you. And I think it's a really exciting moment in a tournament when the draw comes out. And tennis has draws every week and still hasn't figured out the best way to present them in the most exciting manner. And I think that's just disappointing, really.
Yeah, never seen one where I've gone, that's how you do it. Mm. That's a draw. Do that every week. And maybe as soon as that happens, all the other tournaments will go, oh, yeah, that's how we should be doing it. But hasn't happened yet. Anyway, on to the actual names that were in the draw. I have them in front of me. I'm not relying on my memory of the tiny, blurry names on a big screen. Obviously, we knew that Iga Swiatek was going to be at the top of it as the top seed. Julia Niemeyer is her first-round opponent. I think that's pretty interesting.
Well, we've seen her have results, haven't we? Have significant results at Wimbledon and make a real run there. And I think because one of our number during the Grand Slams, Hannah Wilkes, who looks after our Twitter so expertly during all of these four events each year, her eyes just light up at the thought of Julia Niemeyer, don't they? She really rates her. She thinks she's going to be something big. And I remember when she was having that run at Wimbledon, there were a number of people talking about her. And I remember Tommy Haas saying how he felt she had something a bit. She would just sort of surge on the scene and take this sort of tournament by storm. She had that capability, he felt. And I don't think you want to be drawing her if you're the top seed.
Well, objectively, I think she would be seeded had she got points for her Wimbledon run, or certainly she'd be close to it. You know, she is better than her ranking. So objectively, from that perspective, it is a hard draw. Add in the fact that she troubled her at the US Open. It's a doubly tough draw.
Yeah, she was a set and a break up on Iga Swiatek at the US Open. I think in the third round there, really looked like Swiatek was going out that night. Figured it out and ended up racing through the third set. But she is dangerous, Niemeyer. And that's probably the overall take from the two draws, actually, is sort of what happened to the benefit of being the number one seed? Because both Swiatek and Nadal, we'll get onto Nadal, I'm sure, but focusing on Swiatek for the moment, like they've both got tough draws, especially in the first round, but also, you know, in that sort of first week, there are dangerous names. You know, I'm looking at Bianca Andreescu as a potential third-round opponent for Swiatek. And I'm always wary when we talk about Bianca Andreescu. I realise we're talking about, you know, the version of her in 2019 and the sort of potential that still exists in her. But it could come at any moment. I do think it's possible. It's a dangerous name for Swiatek. Buzkova, another potential third round, also tricky, I would say. And then fourth round for Swiatek, potentially Elena Rybakina or Danielle Collins, who is actually playing at the moment in Adelaide. Looks like she might be about to lose to Kudermatova, but tends to play really well in Australia. You know, finalist last year, semi-finalist a few years before that. Like, these are big hitters who can knock you off the court and just make you uncomfortable. I still think Świątek, I'm going to end up picking her to win the tournament, probably, just because of how great she's been over the last year. But, yeah, tricky, I think, for Świątek.
That's what I want to see in her section of the draw. I want to see her loaded with challenges, and that's what we've got here.
Yeah, it's a tough half, I think, actually. Maria Sakkari is the sixth seed at the bottom of this top half. You've got Barbora Krejcikova in there. In Sakkari's quarter, that is Jill Teichman, whose first round is against Harriet Dart. Petra Kvitova is in that quarter. Jessica Pegula in the second quarter. Amanda Anisimova as well. Victoria Azarenka. And then in that top quarter with Świątek, Elena Rybakina, Paula Badosa, Elena Ostapenko, Zhongxin Wen, Coco Gauff.
Mm-hmm. Loaded.
Loaded.
I think Świątek would be fairly pleased to be in Gauff's quarter. Like, she's absolutely dominated that matchup. But before that, there are, as I said, potential problems. And as you said, after that, you know, Jessica Pegula beat her the other week. Such an informed player at the moment. Can she do it again if they meet in the semi-finals? It's a fascinating half. You mentioned just the sort of big names in there. I think one of the most eye-catching round one matches that came out is also in this top half, and that's Sofia Kenin versus Victoria Azarenka, who I believe are the only two former champions in the draw. And they've met each other in the first round there, and they've got some history, haven't they? Because Azarenka beat Kenin love and love in Rome a few years ago.
Oh, I forgot that.
And then Kenin went on to reach the French Open final just sort of a week later or 2 weeks later. So, you know, who knows what will happen in that match. Kenin seems to be coming into a bit more form.
I think Pegula's going to come through that second quarter. That's the only prediction that I'm really willing to put out there at this stage without sort of going through it with a fine tooth comb. But I just have a faith in Pegula. Loaded or not, I think she's coming through there. In unsolicited predictions news.
I think I agree with you as well. And I guess it would be interesting if she played Petra Kvitova, potential fourth round opponent. Kvitova, of course, beat Pegula in the United Cup. One other name in the top half who doesn't catch the eye because she's unseeded, but Emma Raducanu is in there and starts against Tamara Korpach.
Another name that Matt picked out of the abyss. Incredible moment.
The splodges on the screen.
And it was weird how it then... Again, we're getting back into really boring material probably for everyone listening, but then sharpened into focus for the men's draw, and we didn't have to pick out the names. They were clear. It was a very weird experience. I think Korpach is a very good draw for Emma Raducanu, but potential second round against Coco Gauff.
And some people listening might have seen the footage that emerged of Emma Raducanu practicing a couple of days ago here in Melbourne. Of course, she ended up retiring from her match against Victoria Kuzmova last week in Auckland, having turned her ankle. Really gutting moment of bad luck for Emma Raducanu. And then after a practice session here, this footage emerged of her with her ankle heavily bandaged, and she's pretty much serving on one foot and... Couldn't put any weight on it. Was sort of laughing at herself and her situation. It was so absurd. And it looked from that pretty unlikely that she would even take to the court. Well, we went out and watched her practice for a few minutes today. And while we didn't see her hit any serves, it looked a whole world of improvement on what was in that video of a couple of days ago. She certainly looks like she's going to play.
Yeah, well, she's certainly clearly at this stage got her eye on playing and is going through a progressively more stringent training program each day to see what her ankle can do, I think. And that included quite a lot of smashes. So running back and forth, backing up to hit bounce smashes, sometimes hitting them on the fall. It all looked under her control. It's just that she wasn't having to do the sort of movements that you have to do in a match. And even taking away the stress and the jarring and the explosiveness of a match situation, we weren't even seeing her play points. We were seeing her hit nice volleys, hitting some ground strokes, hitting some overheads. And look, she's a brilliant tennis player, like so many of these players are. So it looks good to the eye, and she's super fit, so she's able to move around really well. But still, I didn't see anything there that made me think she's ready. And I just think it's so soon. I don't think she's going to be ready to play properly. I think she might well take to the court. She might be competitive in a match, but I can't see this lasting long with the type of injury she sustained and the period of time she's got to properly recover.
Well, if she does come through court patch, it would likely be Coco Gauff in round two, for which one would need both of one's ankles, I think, in pretty good shape. Looking at the...
what are we saying about tomorrow court patch?
Nothing at all, Matt. Bottom half of the women's draw. We've got Ons Jabeur, of course, as the second seed right at the bottom. Tamara Zidanshek, her first round opponent. Another name that Matt plucked from the void. My jaw dropped.
That might have been my best one, actually.
When he produced that. Incredible. You got Vondrosheva in there. Kaya Kanepi lurking for Ons Jabeur. Samsonova, Ludmila Samsonova. Sloane Stephens in there, although she's on... in whatever the opposite of form is, Sloane Stephens is in it. Beatrice Haddad-Meyer there, who lost to Paola Badosa in a really tight match in Adelaide today. I'm talking myself into more on the hoof predictions, but I think Jabeur will come through that section.
I guess there's a worry about her back. Given what we saw in, where was it, Adelaide? Adelaide 1, I think.
Yeah, that's
where,
a good point.
She received some treatment. Really looked to be bothering her in that match that she lost to Noskova. But
I had forgotten that, actually.
I'm hopeful. I'm always more optimistic on behalf of a player who strains a back, personally. If that's what it was, if it was a back strain, than an ankle or... something at the front, you know, an abdominal injury or something like that. I feel like you can often get a spasm issue or something like that and it loosen up and you'd be okay. But there's a few players out there at the moment that have got big question marks against them just because they have probably been ultra cautious in not playing anything else this week. So we're really left wondering what state they're going to be in.
But you can't rest a back. Unless you're, you know, suspended in bed rest somehow. Do you know what I mean? Are we getting into medical territory that we're not qualified
Probably, yeah. But don't you just sort of not play tennis for a few days and just wander about the place?
Just moving, until just getting out of bed is engaging your back muscles. Anyway, we wish Ons Jabeur well with her back rehab and we hope for the best. Arina Sabalenka would be her quarterfinal opponent. Titleist, Arina Sabalenka.
She looked
of
good.
Of course, she did look
Blimey
good,
heck,
didn't she?
She was on form and the serve and everything else functioning. Cool.
Does that noise, David, that you just made mean...
She's in the mix.
In the mix, yeah. That's
do you think?
Code for mix.
Yeah,
I'd say.
I think so. I've always been a bit... I need to see it before I can believe it.
Matt's
with Sabalenka.
Been very stressed about... making a Sabalenka prediction.
Yeah, I am. And honestly, the two players who I'm probably most stressed about in this entire draw, not knowing what on earth they might do, are actually next to each other in the draw. They're on the same half, opposite quarters, but Caroline Garcia and Arina Sabalenka. just given what we saw from them at the end of last season and what we have seen from them in their careers, you know, their peaks are so high. They feel like they have the potential to blast through this draw or bomb out in the first round. And I don't know which it's going to be.
Stick them in the mix, Matt.
Oh, they're in the mix.
And you're covered.
Then I'd have to deal with it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And then move on.
And Garcia, if she wins her opening round match, will play the winner of Elise Cornet and Leila Fernandez, which is just a great match.
Would watch, will watch.
Have they ever played before, do we know? Because I'm digging out the footage. If they have.
I don't recall it if they have, and I feel like I would recall it.
I'm going to do a hasty Google.
They're both candidates for the intensity list, Leila Fernandez and Elise Cornet. I'll definitely be checking that one out. Top of this half of the draw, so top of the third quarter, Daria Kasatkina, Karolina Pliskova's in there, Veronika Kudermetova, who it looks like is about to win, has just won 6-1 in the third over Danielle Collins in Adelaide. I'd say this is probably the softest quarter. I'd say this is, and this is definitely putting the curse on her, but a big opportunity for Caroline Garcia. Yeah.
Agreed. I mean, Kasatkina's playing well, isn't she? She's into the semi-finals in Adelaide, but Garcia's got the bigger game. And if Garcia's on form, I think she should be coming through this quarter of the draw. I agree. This is probably the most open section in there.
It's funny, though, with Garcia, because it's almost like, how relevant is the draw? It's more relevant, you know, does she find her best? Because I think her best can beat anyone. If she finds it, the draw becomes not irrelevant, but less relevant. So much about her.
If she ends up playing the winner of Fernandez and Cornet, she's going to need to be on her game. Mm. If she is, I still think she wins. By the way, they have played each other once before in singles in Indian Wells in 21. And it was 6-2, 6-3 for Leila Fernandez. And a year later, they played doubles together at Indian Wells, and they reached the semis.
Was that the match? That would have been at the October Indian Wells, wasn't it? When Fernandez had a couple of wins that really picked up where she left off at the US Open. She really...
Best show in tennis, Pam Shriver said, didn't she?
Yeah, she was for a while. I hope she can find it again.
Best show in tennis against Drama Queen for the People.
Yeah.
There's your tagline.
Make a t-shirt with that on it now, someone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Moving on to the men's draw, where Rafael Nadal is the top seed. And as you've hinted at, Matt, I don't think we'll be too chuffed with his draw. He faces Britain's Jack Draper, round one. Jack Draper, who's through to the Adelaide semi-finals, beat Karen Khachanov today, beat Tommy Paul yesterday, has the possibility of winning a first ever title this week in Adelaide 2. I hope the trophy doesn't say Adelaide 2 on it. Imagine if that's your first title.
Congratulations, Jack. You've won Adelaide 2.
And you have to explain to people for the rest of your life when you're showing them around your trophy cabinet. Yeah, there was an identical tournament the week before called Adelaide 1.
Who won that?
I lost in that one.
To the same bloke I beat today.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, it was in the pandemic year.
Yeah.
No. they just carried on with it anyway.
They run out of imagination. Very clever names.
So Rafael Nadal, will Nadal be hoping that Jack Draper carries on his streak, clinches the Adelaide 2 title and is totally spent physically and emotionally by the time he has to face him in Melbourne? Or does he hope that Jack Draper's spell is broken?
Mm.
Because he is on a hot streak now.
And he passes the eye test as a tennis player. Aside from his record, which is impressive, he's got wins over Stefanos Tsitsipas. He's beaten good players. He beat Taylor Fritz. But the way he does it, the way he is able to hang in rallies and be robust and be consistent, but also have point-ending power when he needs it, and I suspect that is going to occur more often as he just keeps on progressing and getting bigger and stronger. I mean, he's such a big guy already, Draper. I mean, if you're not from Britain, you haven't heard too much about him. I mean, when you take a look at him, I always think he looks like a very young Andy Roddick, and he goes after you, and yeah, Nadal will know what's coming for him. I still think Nadal will be able to use the circumstances, the best of five sets. As long as he's fully fit, he will probably feel that he can just outlast anything that Draper can throw at him. But it's a really interesting match. It's a draw that, for me, I was excited by. Not everybody wants to see those sort of players up against each other first round, because you're going to lose an interesting story for sure there. But I want to see them go toe-to-toe.
Yeah, it was the talk of the press room really after the draw, wasn't it? Everyone was kind of wondering that same thing, you know, is it better for Nadal if Draper keeps winning or if he does lose? I agreed with Simon Briggs, who said that he's seen it before, that a player gets really locked in a tournament the week before a slam and wins it. He was pointing out Dan Evans a couple of years ago won his first title the week before the Australian Open and then had a bit of a come down at the start of the Australian Open, because it was such a big deal to win your first title, and it will be if Draper can manage to win it, that inevitably, I think after that, it's very difficult to sort of sustain that emotional high going into a match against Nadal. And so I tend to think that Nadal will win this regardless of what Draper does in Adelaide, but it's uncomfortable for Nadal. You know, we've talked about how he wanted an easy draw to build himself in, and this isn't that at all. He's gonna have to play pretty well from match one here. And just looking at his record recently, I mean, let's remember, Nadal has lost 6 of his last 7 matches, and the one he won was against Casper Ruud, who had already qualified for the semi-finals in Turin, has a sort of Nadal inferiority complex thing going on anyway. I'm not sure he sort of even really wanted to win that match, Casper Ruud. It's a weird dynamic. So he's kind of on a 6-match losing streak, Nadal, in sort of matches that really count and really matter, albeit against very good players, but Draper's a very good player.
Last night he got beaten by a paddling pool.
Explain.
To be fair, he wasn't the only one.
No, last night was the Play for Peace event staged by Tennis Australia in the Rod Laver Arena, raising money for aid relief in Ukraine. Fantastic event, attended and supported by many of the top players, including Rafael Nadal. Andy Murray was also there, Francis Tiafoe, Coco Gauff, Maria Sakkari, a number of Ukrainian players, Marta Kostyuk, Dan Ostremska, Alexei Krotik, who last night I literally couldn't pick out of a lineup because he was on our screens and we were all saying, who on earth is that bloke? And today I was commentating on him in the final round of qualies. He beat Dennis Kudler to qualify for a Grand Slam main draw for the very first time. It is a great event, and it's brilliant that they did it. And actually, my favourite part of it, when they sort of play a doubles match where they're all mic'd up and they're just sort of playing hit and giggle, I'm not really into that. I sort of think it's not really one thing nor the other. But they had a little game where they put paddling pools on the baseline on one end of the court, two paddling pools in the corner, like targets, you know, like you see in when the players practice in during drills in their practice sessions. And we all looked at one another and said, well, this is made for Nadal. You know, he could hit a small thing from a very long distance. Couldn't think of an analogy. And up he steps, shanks the first one, doesn't even make the court. I mean, he literally couldn't hit a tennis ball into a paddling pool. That's not the punchline to a joke.
He had about 10
goes. Physically couldn't. I'm more than 10. It was quite alarming for a while. And then they start playing the little hit and giggles doubles match. And again, Nadal's shanking all over the place. And then he just sort of goes and sits down.
He subbed himself out for a while.
Go and have a little sit down, Rafa, because it's not happening for you, is it?
And to be fair, when he came back on, he looked better. And obviously, I know you can't read anything into a charity hit and giggle, but if he crashes out to Jack Draper in straight sets, I will be bringing up the paddling pool thing. Well, I reserve the right to bring up the paddling pool thing again.
Here's a question for you. Do you read anything into, if you watch a warm-up on court, the knock-up, and you see a player shanking or hitting a topspin forehand that lands in the bottom of the net or something like that, do you ever think, ooh,
I think it's a bit alarming. I read into
if it's clearly a sign of nerves, yeah, I agree.
You'll assume that they'll play through that.
For example, Alexei Krotik today in the final round of qualifying in the warm up and in the early games of the match, he was rubbish. Completely different player to what we ended up seeing in sets two and three. I was thinking he couldn't middle the ball at all. They weren't quite shanks, but the ball just didn't sound right off the racket. You could tell it wasn't coming out of the middle. And he was, you know, he was biggest match of his life, biggest day of his whole life. You know, by qualifying today, he earned more than his total career prize money to date.
Wow.
So no wonder. But yes, in that sort of instance, I think you can read into it, but I don't think you can read form from that kind of thing. But again, brackets reserve the right to raise the paddling pool thing.
And we also know that form, as Matt's just detailed, is not good in terms of his recent record.
Yeah. Mm. Nor was it last year. I mean, I know he had won Melbourne 1 or 2. Was it...
Who could say? Maybe Nadal's trophy says Melbourne 1 or Melbourne 2.
He'd won one of them. But then before that, it was on crutches. And, you know, there are caveats to his form at the end of last year, weren't there? He never plays well indoors.
I did promise I would not have this type of conversation about Nadal again.
So yeah. Difficult.
every slam I say I won't doubt Nadal again. And yet, sort of, here we are. But, I mean, the thing is, it's not just Draper that makes his draw tough. You know, I think if he comes through Draper, he'll probably be playing quite well. But Francis Tiafoe is a potential fourth-round opponent who, of course, beat him at the US Open. And then Daniil Medvedev is a potential quarter-finalist. And, you know, okay, Nadal won last year's final, but it was kind of a miracle that he did. You know, Medvedev was really on top of him for half of that match. It's tricky for Nadal. I really do think that it is. Even potentially Brandon Nakashima in the second round, you know. He's got a great backhand, Nakashima, and Nadal likes hitting his lefty forehand into players' backhands, and I think Nakashima will be okay with that. So that sort of matchup I find quite interesting as well. So, yeah, just tricky for Nadal, but fascinating to see how he tries to navigate it.
The second quarter, so a potential semi-final opponent for Nadal or Medvedev, who are the top seeds in that first quarter. You've got Stefanos Tsitsipas there. He faces Konstantin Alice in the opening round, who's, I mean, look, Tsitsipas is the favourite, but Alice is, after being a sort of hotly tipped junior, is finally starting to put a few results together, isn't he, the Frenchman?
Well, he pushed Djokovic, didn't he, last week? Mm. A couple of tiebreak sets, and he really was,
he was good.
Hurting Djokovic.
Yeah, he was 5-2 up in the first set, probably should have won it, and I think got to the quarters in Auckland this week. So, yeah, he's playing quite well. That's a little bit tricky for Tsitsipas.
Lorenzo Musetti is in this quarter, as is Jannik Sinner. They would potentially face off in the third round, which I think could be very interesting. It's interesting indeed. Cameron Norrie is in there. That is TBC, though, because he might be stuck in Auckland for the rest of his life.
Where are they up
Genuinely
to there?
Genuinely not sure if they'll ever finish that tournament.
Well, he's into the semi-finals to face Jenson Brooksby. At the time of recording, the two other semi-finalists are not known. And that this is 9:30 on Thursday, and they're supposed to be playing tomorrow. Gasquet and Goffin are just in a rain delay at the moment. And then I think Laszlo Gera is in the other quarterfinal. I can't remember who he's playing. He beat Casper Ruud. So, a long way to go in Auckland.
A lot of matches have been moved indoors, but they're trying to play as much of it outdoors as they can, because obviously, with all due respect to the tournament, a lot of people are playing that to get practice for the Australian Open and play themselves into form, and indoor form is pretty different. So I feel for them over in Auckland, but poor old Cameron Norrie and Felix Auger-Aliassime down at the bottom of that second quarter. Vasek Pospisil, countryman for him in the opening round, a potential second round with Stan Wawrinka. Mm. Anyone want to throw out some predictions into the ether? You see anything unexpected happening? Or do we think the usual suspects, the likely candidates, are coming through?
I do think Auger-Aliassime could be threatened in that section. I think he's vulnerable against whether it's Norrie or Čorić, personally. I think that's a tough section to be in. Not to say he can't come through it. I mean, I don't know. I kind of think Norrie might be a marginal favourite to come through that section of the draw and end up facing Tsitsipas. That's how I feel about it. What do you think?
Felix needs some Auckland rain, doesn't he? That would change the picture. I think I'll probably end up going with Auger-Aliassime, but I don't disagree with your analysis, David. I think that is a tricky section for him. I just sort of, come on, now's the time, Felix, to get through a really tough section like this and go really deep in a slam.
We'll find out a lot about him.
I think so.
I think over the course of the next few days, maybe a couple of weeks, we'll see. Very interesting one to watch, Felix Auger-Aliassime. Looking at the bottom half of the draw, Andrei Rublev is at the top of it. He's drawn Dominic Thiem in the opening round. I wanted a good draw for Dominic Thiem. I want something to happen. I know Rublev lost yesterday in Adelaide to Thanasi Kokkinakis. On paper, not a great result, although Kokkinakis does seem to be an Adelaide specialist, defending champion, of course. He's, I think, won again tonight, reached the semi-finals again. Still, though, that's a rubbish draw for Dominic Thiem.
I think the bigger point really is Thiem. It's a bit like you were saying about Garcia. If Dominic Thiem was Dominic Thiem that we remember, he would handle Andrei Rublev no matter what Rublev did. But the guy isn't the same player anymore, I'm afraid. And we've seen flickers of him reminding us of how good he used to be. But that's all we've seen, really. A run to a semi-final, I think it was. We've seen some matches where he's hit the signature backhand, and you still drool and purr over watching it. But he doesn't walk around with authority anymore. He doesn't walk around making you believe that he's got it all under control.
My rational brain does accept that you're right, David, but I'm not ready. I'm not ready yet. I'm going to stay in denial.
But nobody seems to be able to put their finger on what's the problem. That's what I can't understand. It appears the wrist is recovered. He's supposedly in a good frame of mind now. So why on earth is he not playing very well? Nobody understands.
I mean, I suppose we don't have a huge amount of data for this year. I mean, he lost in qualifying in Adelaide, didn't he, to Sun Wu Kwon, and it was, you know, a little bit ugly. It wasn't great. But as you hinted at, he was playing well at the end of last year. He really was. It wasn't, I would say it was more than just flashes. I felt like it was actually really building up to getting somewhere close to where he was before. I watched him play Tommy Paul in Vienna, I think it was.
Mm. Yeah, that's the tournament I remember.
Some of it was, you know, vintage team. It was great. The signs were good. I thought he could build this year and maybe be close to where he was by the clay court season, which probably does still feel like his best surface, even though he's a US Open champion. But it doesn't feel like he's carried that momentum into this year. Maybe just that performance in Adelaide feels like a little bit of a step back. And as you said, it is just hard to put your finger on it. But I think he's one of those players where he needs to be all in or he's not effective. You know, the way he throws himself into his forehands and backhands, he has to be fully committed and confident, I think. And if that's missing a bit, it feels like his whole game doesn't quite work, doesn't quite fit.
Mm.
So, yeah. But I'll be watching that match because I'll be hoping for the Dominic Thiem of old to make an appearance, that's for sure.
Stop making me sad, everyone. I'm going to stay in denial about Dominic Thiem for a little while longer. Andrei Rublev, though, of course, is the projected quarterfinal opponent for Novak Djokovic, who is in this section as well. Whether that quarterfinal will actually happen, though, is a little bit of a question mark, because also in this quarter are Holger Rune and Nick Kyrgios. Who, P.S., I would like to see play one another.
Oh, yeah. When could that happen? Is that third round?
I think that would be third
Kyrgios
round.
Kyrgios Rune,
yeah.
Third round. Mm. Could you just imagine?
I don't know what to ask you about Nick Kyrgios, and I don't know what to say because we literally haven't seen him this season.
No. He's supposed to be playing this exhibition match tomorrow night, isn't he?
For ages. I've no idea what kind of shape he's in. I've no idea whether that's relevant or not.
Well, and as you pointed out the other day, Catherine, it is perhaps a little bit of a myth that Nick Kyrgios can just rock up and play sort of lights out tennis straight away. You know, like he had matches before Wimbledon on the grass last year, and he didn't have a lot of matches before the Australian Open last year, and he was a damn sight better at Wimbledon than he was at the Australian Open. Like, I do think, as talented as he is, and it, you know, he probably can pick up a decent level without playing much. You know, there is some truth to it, but this idea that he can just be at his best after not having competed for so long, I don't know if I agree with that. I'm not sure there's enough evidence saying that that is the case. So I completely agree. He's probably got enough to beat, who's he got in the first round? Roman Safiulin, who I believe was a very good junior and did quite well in the ATP Cup for Russia last year. But, yeah, if he played Holger Rune in the third round, would he necessarily have enough to beat him? I don't know. It's, as you said, who knows what to expect.
And Holger Rune has played one, lost one.
Yeah.
For the season. So goodness knows what to make of him. Novak Djokovic, I mean, we know exactly what to make of him, particularly here in Australia. Up until a few hours ago, I was thinking I'd take Djokovic over the field at this tournament. That is how confident I am in Novak Djokovic. But that leg injury that was plaguing him a little bit at Adelaide 1, that Daniil Medvedev mocked a little bit in the semi-final. I mean, look, I say plaguing him. He still went on to win the title, obviously. But, you know, there were signs of it. We are just hearing whispers, and it could mean absolutely nothing, but we are hearing the odd whisper that this leg injury is not nothing.
Mm. Well, I mean, he's supposed to be playing Nick Kyrgios in this practice match for live television in front of an absolutely packed crowd at the Australian Open tomorrow. As we record here on Thursday night local time, that's supposed to happen on Friday night. Now, let's see. Let's see if that match happens or not. Because if Djokovic is hypersensitive and careful about his body, he will not take chances at this point in the tournament, and neither should he. He knows that if he can come into this tournament as close to 100% fit as possible, he's likely to win it, even if he hasn't had any extra little bits of matches or a moment in front of the crowd and whatever. I mean, I know that there might be a psychological obstacle for him to still deal with playing his first Australian Open match after deportation last year, although I do suspect Adelaide probably helped bridge that for him the way that went. But he manages these situations so incredibly well that I just don't think he will take a chance tomorrow unless he feels okay. Now, he might decide to just go out with Nick Kyrgios and have a hit and giggle, or I don't know if he's not feeling absolutely bang on it. But yeah, he's the most finely tuned race car of a tennis player that probably we've ever had, in terms of how careful he is and how extremely he feels any discomfort or pain, and therefore does something about it, i.e. stops playing or has a sit down and has it looked at, all those sort of things. But that's kind of one of the weapons in his armory. He makes sure he's physically ready, and he times going full out for the most important moments, particularly now, being the age he is. He doesn't go 100% all the time, because I don't think he probably can.
And for that reason, I think it's a very good draw for him, because I don't see anybody in the early stages that can trouble him.
Best draw he's had in years, I reckon, this.
David was, I think, playing devil's advocate earlier when he suggested that Grigor Dimitrov in the third round could be tricky.
Never know with Grigor.
But yeah, I agree. This is a great draw for Djokovic in the first week. And given the concern over the leg, the first week feels crucial. If he's fine getting through those matches, you then also back him in the big matches as well, don't you? So I think I maybe do still take Djokovic over the field, even with those concerns.
I've decided to toss out another unsolicited prediction, and that is that Taylor Fritz is going to come through the bottom quarter. Nicolas Basilashvili for him in the opening round. Mirmir Ketsmanovic will be his third round opponent. Zverev's in there. Matteo Berrettini is in his quarter. Casper Ruud in his quarter as well. I've got him coming through that quarter, I think. Again, like with Pegula, I just feel confident in him now. I don't think he's going to let me down. Last year, I went on him a bit early. I did think he'd come through that Tsitsipas match, and he was close, but no cigar. I think Taylor Fritz today would win that match.
Yes, I think I agree. But also, he's got a bit of a point to prove. You know, he lost in the first round at the US Open, and people were talking him up then as well. And I think even since then, he's made some progress. You know, he's really impressive to get to the ATP finals. He performed well there. He started the year really well. The conditions are good for him here. I think I agree with you. Obviously, Berrettini's been pretty reliable in slams in terms of getting to his seeding and better and only losing to really good players. Casper Ruud has been extremely good in slams, but it sort of feels like Fritz has got the form on his side, and you know, to quote Andy Roddick, form is so important. I think I like Fritz down there as well.
Matteo Berrettini features in probably the last match that we should pick out from the opening rounders in the draw, and that is because he has drawn Andy Murray in the opening round. A replay, of course, of their third round match at the US Open last year. My kingdom for a video of Andy Murray's reaction.
I would suggest it was something along the lines of, oh,
He's made it very clear that he wants some good draws. He's put that thought out into the universe, and tennis is not repaying him.
And the universe has laughed in his face.
Laughed in his face. Have Matteo Berrettini in round one.
It's tough, isn't it? Matteo Berrettini rarely doesn't show up. I know there was that Casper Ruud performance at the US Open last year, but he doesn't lose early.
It needs Murray to burst out of the blocks, and too often he's fought a valiant, courageous rearguard action to make it close or relatively respectable when the match is already more or less lost. That's what happened against Berrettini at the US Open. I think he lost the first two sets by a single break, and then he started to come back into it. But it's just so difficult to do it if you get down. He needs to put his foot on it from ball one.
Casper Ruud, incidentally, second seed at the bottom of the draw. He's got Thomas Mahatch in the opening round. And we just happened to walk past Thomas Mahatch during his practice session earlier. We were leaving the Emirati Kanu practice session. We were headed out the exit, actually, but we had to walk literally just about 6 feet away from Thomas Mahatch in order to do so. And he was embroiled in this baseline cross-court drill. And he was making us gasp with his weight of shot and precision and flat hitting. And it was astonishing.
And his partner, whoever that was.
Whoever that was. And it just makes you realise how bloody good all of these tennis players are when you stand that close to them. And David and Matt played tennis this morning, and they came back. I saw them at breakfast. They were feeling pretty darn tooting good about their tennis until they saw Thomas Mahatch up close today.
I had a bit of a strut in my step this morning.
It's a different sport, isn't it?
I walked away sheepishly from that practice court that I watched those two on. I mean, in awe, though, to be honest, I was shuddering at the power that they were hitting the ball at each other, and just didn't matter how hard it came at them, they tried to hit it back harder.
I know, you know, we joke about, oh, you know, they're rubbish. They don't stand a chance against so-and-so. These are all such bloody good tennis players.
Yeah, they are. Oh, yeah.
They're just outrageously good.
And you're right. It is important, if you can, I think, sometimes to just watch up close, you know, even if it is only practice, because you do get a greater appreciation, I think, for just how good they are up close. I mean, this rally got a small round of applause, didn't it, from the people watching? I mean, it wasn't just us who were sort of in awe at this.
The players were a little bit like, well, what's the big deal?
We do. Yeah. Just for the record, David was awesome this morning at tennis.
There were no points on the line.
We were just rallying, but my God, David just started middling the ball and hitting winners on the run and slices, you know, Edbergian.
You say run. I mean, it was a more of a gentle lollop. But
honestly, he's playing it down.
I have to come and see it with my own eyes.
I can never produce it in front of Catherine.
Well, if a tree falls in the forest and there's no one there to see
it, I was there.
Does it make a sound?
it's doubles and it's points tomorrow, so...
Oh no!
Could be, Could be a different scenario.
Matt's become a tournament director upon arrival in Melbourne.
A little tennis court in our complex here where the apartment is. And yeah, Matt's just started organising tournaments.
We'll update you on results on our next pod, which should be coming to you over the weekend before the start of dailies from Monday at the Australian Open. A couple of other bits of news for you. One very happy bit of news on two fronts here. Naomi Osaka has announced on social media that she is pregnant. She says, "The past few years have been interesting, to say the least, but I find that it is the most challenging times in life that may be the most fun. These 2 months away from the sport have really given me a new love and appreciation for the game I've dedicated my life to. I realise that life is so short and I don't take any moments for granted. Every day is a new blessing and adventure. I know I have so much to look forward to in the future. One thing I'm looking forward to is for my kid to watch one of my matches and tell someone that's my mum. Ha ha. 2023 will be a year that'll be full of lessons for me. And I hope I'll see you guys at the start of the next one, because I'll be at Oz 2024. Now, obviously, it's lovely news that she's expecting a baby and is clearly so happy about it. It's also lovely news, obviously, I'm coming at this from a tennis perspective, is lovely news that she's missing the Australian Open for a happy reason.
And that she's missing the sport.
And that she's missing the sport.
Mind.
And that she intends to be back.
Yeah, expressing her love for it and how much she's realised it means to her is, for people like us, and I'm sure for you listening, because you're listening to a tennis podcast, it's lovely to hear somebody that good, that young, who still has so much to offer if she's in love with the sport and she wants to do it, to hear a talk like that. It's really uplifting for me.
And she did, you know, we don't want to psychoanalyse it all too much because we're not qualified to, but she's talked a lot about the emotional struggle of feeling like she's defined by tennis and defined by winning and losing. And while she's the one that's articulated that a lot, I think many, many players struggle from that feeling. So having something else so significant in her life, I think, could very well help with those struggles. So good luck to Naomi Osaka on that journey, and goodness me, we hope to see you back in the sport very soon.
Mm. Yeah, the sport will be waiting for Naomi Osaka when she's back.
Here. I've run you through, I think, what's happening at the other tournaments. David, though, will want me to mention the fact that in Hobart at the WTA 250, he inexplicably picked Sofia Kenin to win the tournament. And she is into the semi-finals.
I'd say explicably. And actually, if I look around the room, we've all got reason to feel fairly good about ourselves just at the moment, predictions-wise, from the newsletter the other day.
Yes, I got lured in. I did my annual thing of going to Australia, watching one Paula Badosa performance and deciding she's going to win everything.
I've marked you down just for Badosa weekly until about March. Yeah.
She was blooming good, and she beat Beatrice at Admire today. And she's into the semi-finals, where she'll play Daria Kasatkina, and it'll be Kudermetova against either Belinda Bencic or Caroline Garcia. They are, I think, just taken to the court in Adelaide. And in Auckland, Casper Ruud, as we said, lost 7-6 in the third to Laszlo Gera. Norrie will face Jensen Brooksby in the semi-finals. I have a big introduction to make, folks.
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to introduce you to Cordelia.
Oh.
Cordelia is our Australian Open mascot.
Oh, I haven't seen Cordelia.
She's a 7-year-old long-haired tortoiseshell cat owned by Rachel Shockett, which is a brilliant name, and Rachel has helpfully given us a guide as to how to pronounce her name, which is ever so brilliant. And both Rachel and Cordelia live in Idaho, and she's just lovely. She's just absolutely lovely.
Aww.
My brother used to have a long-haired tortoiseshell cat called Polly, and she was lovely too. And Cordelia, I don't know if this is who she's named after, but Cordelia is a character from a much-loved character from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Our Buffy correspondent there.
That's the second podcast this year you've weaved Buffy the Vampire Slayer into, I think.
Yeah, any opportunity. let us know, Rachel.
Well, there is an excellent bit of background to Cordelia to come in the newsletter. There's a newsletter tease for you.
Good lad, Matt.
And Cordelia's connection to tennis is explained in the newsletter. It's a very good one.
And there'll be a picture of her as well. She is majestic. So welcome, Cordelia. Welcome to the mascot fold, because we have our own mascots. I've got Xenia.
Hey.
David's got Darwin. Oh, no, sorry. Matt's got Darwin.
Yeah. I've got Maisie. I don't care. Come on, Maisie.
We have our executive producers and top folks, Jamie, Hannah and Drew. Hello to the three of you and thank you for being our executive producers. We have Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss, who sponsor Billie Jean, who's gallivanting around South London as we speak. And we have shout-outs, Matt.
We have Jen Moore, who is in New York.
Oh, like Jennifer Brady.
And Capriati. Right, Jen.
And Jen has said that her dog, Max, is a big fan of Billie Jean and hopes to meet her someday. Billie Jean, I think, both human and dog. But Jen says that she would sign up for some dog sitting while Catherine's working.
Oh, hello, Jen.
I mean, shoot your shot.
We like Jen. Thank you.
We've also got Randy Curtis, who is in Illinois.
Right, Randy.
Hello, Randy.
And Randy says that his daughter, Alex, lives in Queens and is an even bigger fan of the podcast. So could we give her a shout out too, as well as her cats, Mish and Bo?
Oh.
Right, Mish and Bo.
Is that B-E-A-U, Bo?
Yes.
Great.
Fantastic. Right, Alex.
Hello, Alex and Randy. Randy's a name that just doesn't exist in England. I find it very exotic.
Quite right.
Thank you to all of you.
Like Big Randy from No Laying Up, who's also a friend of the pod.
Yes, I believe he introduced our 1,000th episode, last year during Wimbledon.
No Laying Up, a golf podcast, by the way, folks, if you ever fancy a listen to that. It's good.
We've got Lara Burgess, who's in London.
Right, Lara.
Hello, Lara. I don't want to say Lara Croft Tomb Raider because I'm sure she gets it all the bloomin' time.
Is Lara Arruabenea a player?
Nope. Lara Arua...
This is going well.
Arruabarena. Arruabarena.
Yes. Arruabarena.
There we go.
I was close, kind of.
Yes.
Right, Lara.
Hello, Lara. Thank you.
We've got Seth Warsing in Toronto.
Seth.
Hello, Seth. I was going to say also a character from Buffy, but it's an actor that plays a character from Buffy.
Right. Mm. We definitely don't have any tennis players called Seth in my 90s onwards knowledge.
No.
I think, you know, Seth, you are an original.
I don't think it's a very athletic
world.
Name.
Well, what are you saying about Seth?
There's nothing wrong with not being athletic. But do you know what I mean? Name me an athlete, any athlete called Seth. Right then, case closed. Thank you, Seth. That was not a slight at all.
Oh dear, I've got to do the final shout out now. And it's for Karen Ray in Michigan.
Hi, Karen.
Hello, Karen.
Laya Kachanov. Same spelling.
I knew you were going to go there. That was
I genuinely hadn't thought it. I thought, oh, that's very good.
I don't know any...
Karen Pickering, the British swimmer.
But I don't know any female Karen tennis players at all. I can't think of any.
No, not at all. I think you've done well there, David.
Thank you.
Karen will be delighted. Possibly more delighted than Seth. Thank you, Karen. Thank you to all of our friends. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We will be back on Saturday after media day when we'll have spoken to all the players, put them on the spot, asked them questions, made sweeping predictions on the basis of
the paddling pools,
what they look like and how they smell, and we'll be back to tell you about all of it on Saturday. So we'll speak to you then, and thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.